Thank you very much. I'm going to apologize from the beginning. This presentation doesn't have any pictures, and I'm a Mac person. So when I'm in front of a PC, I always panic a little bit. Basically, what I decided to do for my presentation was just talk a little bit about how you become an international consultant or how you get involved in international work. And I'd like to preface this by saying that basically I'll encourage interaction from the audience. I see that we have our new international extension educator honoree here from the USAID, correct? And we also have John Griffiths in the back, who is international expert extraordinaire. So as I go along, if I forget an acronym, if there's something you can add, please bring it in. Okay? So I'm going to start just about talking about why do you want to be an international consultant in the first place? Now, for me, it was easy enough. I'm a travel junkie. I like going anywhere. You know, I would fly to Visalia from Fresno if you would let me. But basically, it usually falls into a couple categories. First, you get to be part of something larger than yourself. You get to participate in projects around the world. You get to hope that you're helping in some way, shape, or form. The other thing is to learn something. Basically, I got my best research idea from Iran, doing some of the work that I did attending a meeting in Iran. I learned about salinity and how they grow pistachios, brought that back to California, and it's safe to say that it has transformed our industry, the pistachio industry, in terms of where we will plant trees. And then finally, there is simply to earn money, depending upon the kind of consultant you might eventually become. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about how you would become an international consultant at different stages in your career. And what I want you to realize is as I go through student, graduated, undergraduate, graduate student, that these things are cumulative, meaning things I've mentioned for an undergraduate still would apply to the next stages. So if you're an undergraduate and you think you're going to be interested in international work in any way, shape, or form, take advantage of the opportunities you have as an undergraduate. Study abroad, okay? Or go on trips that that the university might be offering within any classes. Another thing is start to learn another language. And if you think you might have an idea of what area of the world you're interested in, look for that language. Though at this point, I would say Spanish. Between Spanish and English, you have two-thirds of the world. Write a Fulbright. They're not that hard to do. You know, the grants office or anybody who's ever written one will help you write. It's only a couple pages. It could be an independent or cooperative project under a professor. But the Fulbright is sort of the first entry kind of level if you want to do an independent project. And go over to your international programs office and volunteer. Now, some international programs offices, like at California, we have one that, frankly, is... I always characterize it as all hat and no horse. It basically is, we've got a very competent person heading it, but he does not have much support in the way of funding or staff. They have to live from grant to grant. Other places, we are plainly jealous of Texas and Purdue. They have wonderful offices and are really set up to support grant writing, finding grant opportunities, managing them afterwards. We're hoping someday we have an office like that. So as an undergraduate, you could go over and volunteer to be an aide in a project that they might have where they have international people coming. If you really get lucky, you'll get to go abroad with them. A number of our undergraduates have done that. But go to the international programs, or we also have a global programs office at UC Davis, which is more oriented toward bringing foreign students to study at Davis, but there's still international opportunities. If you've graduated from college, join the Peace Corps. It's an incredible number of people who I see in international consulting that got their start in the Peace Corps. So if you're soon to graduate, think that might be a way, join the Peace Corps. Again, you can write a Fulbright. Anybody can write one. And then there's international employment. There's any number of John Griffiths would be a great help.
person for great help like this or our honoree here. But basically, look for employment in NGOs, in any of the organizations in Washington that write grants. But get employment internationally, or just go be an English teacher in China or any other country you think you might be interested in. But between undergraduate school and graduate school, get yourself some international experience as a volunteer or as a paid person. Okay, if you're a graduate student, by this time, if you're really thinking about international work, I would start to think about what your métier, what your focus is going to be. Do you have any region of the world you're really interested in? What level do you want to work in? Do you think you want to be a horticultural expert? Do you think you want to manage? Do you want to manage local welfare projects? You should start thinking about how you might focus at this point. Cultivate your international network, which means get your professor to take you to international meetings. The International Society of Horticultural Science is a great place to get started because they have these working groups: citrus, fig, pistachio and almond, olive growing. Those are basically small societies. They only meet once every 4 years. They're work groups within the International Society of Horticultural Science, but they're small groups. You can meet all the people involved in citrus. In one meeting, that'll be 150, 200 people. Pistachios and almond, that's a meeting every 4 years, about 125,000. Sometimes they have these meetings in the States, but it's a good way to make contacts, start finding out about labs, programs. And the interesting thing about the International Society of Horticultural Science work group meetings is commercial companies also attend those meetings, much more so than in the United, meaning as participants, much more so than in the United States. So good chance to make contacts. There's also specific grants for graduate students at Davis. We have the REFA, and please don't ask me what the acronym means, I've forgotten, but they're small short-term grants for students who design their own project and generally go do it in cooperation with another professor. John, do you remember what it means, REFA? Oh, good. Now,
yeah, I'm not sure.
Oh, good. Now I don't feel so bad.
Yeah.
Again, there's Fulbright and there's Bloom grants. But as a graduate student, you can write grants. And you might look when you select your graduate professor, see if he does international work. Okay, now you've got a job. You're an assistant to a full professor. In addition to all those things, by then, again, you should be focusing on what area of the world you might like to go to, or your métier, or getting experience. And then the next most valuable thing you can do is accept meeting, reviewing, and hosting opportunities. You know, once you're in your job in horticulture, you know how to grow a tree or run a greenhouse or something like that. The next thing you know, the international programs office or the dean's office or somebody's calling you and saying, oh, Susie so-and-so is coming from such-and-such. Can you take her around? This, you know, and your immediate reaction is, well, if you're an extension like me, how many chips do you want to use up with your growers? You know, do you really want to be a tour guide? But these are the opportunities to really meet, spend some time with people that might turn into something. Okay, so take those chances to host international visitors, or what you will be asked to do is, as you're further along in your career, is, oh, they just want 2 days of how to grow pistachios, and then could you take them to the ranch, the processing plant, and to the marketing board? And oftentimes, if it's arranged and they have funding to do this, you can get what we call salary savings. The university won't pay you to do it, but they'll give, in our university, I can't answer for others, but they'll put money into your research account at your pay rate and benefits to take on this 3 days of activity and maybe 2 days of preparation. But those opportunities are a good chance to develop potential cooperations, though at first they really look just like a bother. And you do have to weigh, if you're an extension and you have a grower clientele, you have to weigh how they're going to view this. Some of them are very happy to talk to other people for the price of a free cup of coffee. They will tell them everything they learn. Others think what we have is a secret, and that we are aiding and abetting competitors. You have to know your clientele. Take a sabbatical. I know people that have bragged to me they've never taken the sabbatical. I don't know why they would brag about that. It's something you've earned. But take a sabbatical, and then don't make the mistake of staying home and getting caught up on your writing, and especially don't make the mistake of staying home and answering the phone. You answer the phone, it's all over. You're not on sabbatical, okay? But go someplace, and if you can, prepare by studying the language so that you don't get to Palermo like I did for 8 months and mix up the little bit of Spanish you knew with Italian the whole time. But sabbaticals are an incredibly valuable thing that our jobs give us. Don't get into the mindset of thinking, I don't have time. Okay. International meetings, participate. You know, ASHS or IASHS offer you the combined membership. I think it's a slightly better deal. But join the International Society of Horticultural Science. And the meeting every 4 years is overwhelming. You know, just walk down the hall and all you're doing is saying hi to friends you've met all over the world. But go to the work group meetings. I have been going to the fig, olive, pistachio, and citrus work group meetings over the years. And they're only held every 4 years. They're usually in the range of 75 to 150 people. It's time enough for real research to get done so you can actually follow the progress in projects. It's a place where you can really develop research cooperations. And in my case, you can make lifelong friends. I'm now watching the children of some of my colleagues become professors. Okay. Again, there's a standard old Fulbright that you can write. And then, once you're a professor, there are the international grant RFPs, the requests for proposals. We have somebody here who can discuss the wide range of USAID and non-governmental offerings. What I'm going to say is when you reach this level, you really need to have staff for writing, not so much for writing the grant, though the experience I have had with professional grant writers, a commercial one in California, was very successful because they know what to fill in and how. And this was even way back when, the first one I wrote. This is back when you didn't send them in online, and they said, send one FedEx and one DHL. And I said, why? And one made it and one didn't. So they know with these firms that specialize in helping you write grants, they may not know the content. They can't help you with that, but they can help you with the hows and whys. Because when you get up to some, especially the level of USAID grants, you're going to need staff at least to manage it, maybe not to write it, but definitely by the time you get one of these, you're going to need management to do the reports well. I remember the first time we got a USAID grant in the International Programs Office. I remember being totally in over my head in terms of understanding management, execution, and report writing. It's an entirely different world. Now I'm going to talk about a term we have called Beltway Bandits. Beltway Bandits are commercial firms that will come to you and offer to have you be a consultant or a cooperator or basically participate with them in writing a grant. And I shouldn't maybe use this term. They aren't all bad. But I have had, and multiple of us have had the experience where, let's write this proposal. Tell you what, you write it, and then we'll help flesh it out, and then we'll proceed to the budgeting. And you'll find things like, they proceeded all right to the budgeting and hired somebody other than you. So I guess I'd say it's like any other contract. Ask lots of questions. Make sure you know what you're getting into. Be like Columbo. Just keep coming back and coming back and coming back and get it in writing. But by the time you are up to the international USAID and major NGO grants, it's an entirely different level of management. Okay? People generally follow two paths. There are people that want to go into development work. You assist in developing capacity somewhere in the world, whether it's human, educational, research, or extension. These are people who basically, they're often the former Peace Corps people. But these are people who want to be part of something larger than themselves, people who feel it's one of our missions in horticulture, besides having an adventure traveling, is to help somebody else in the world. Or I have seen colleagues, a particular example is a friend of mine who works in olive oil. He's now a metier expert. His expertise is basically olive production and olive oil production. And what I would say is he's a very highly paid private consultant, the kind who comes in, diagnoses a problem. He works with the kind of company that wants to improve their efficiency. They improve their operations. He generally either does short diagnoses, or they may have a sustained contract and be on retainer with these companies to call whenever they need them. So those are generally, by the time you're a fully developed private consultant, you're usually one or the other. You usually don't swing between the two. Okay? And the final objective, if you're going to be the kind of person that gets into development and research, you have developed a focus, a region, an expertise, contacts, and you're developing traction, meaning you're actually producing change. This is primarily a development and research consultant, and these are usually long-term cooperations. One lab in a department will have a long-term cooperation with another, or you have a long-term project. For example, I developed a little post-harvest lab down in Sindh in southern Pakistan that I still talk to or cooperate with. Or if you're the experienced commercial consultant, as I said, you basically work with large commercial entities or for for-profit organizations. You may work on a contract, a retainer. You can be a single visit guy. Comes in, diagnosis, makes the suggestion, and leaves. Okay? Now I'm going to move into just practical advice that I have learned the hard way over the years. I have what I call the Wall Street Journal rule. I have a clientele, the pistachio industry, the fig citrus industries in California. My rule is if I can't see it written on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, I don't do it. Meaning I have to be able to get up in front of my growers, and I bobbled it badly the first time in front of 800 growers, of explaining why I was over in China helping them grow pistachios. And the answer is, you always learn something. You always learn something that helps you. I've gotten my best research ideas that have supported my career, particularly salinity management of pistachios and other tree crops, from working in Iran or cooperating with Iran. But if you can't defend to your growers, or if you can't put on the front of the page of the Wall Street Journal why you're there, you probably shouldn't go, okay? Really prepare before you depart. Ask people to send you information. I'm horticulture, so I want to know the climate, the topography, the soils, the water, the labor, the infrastructure, the local organizations and markets. Remember, in horticulture, all our careers, no matter where we go, we get four questions. What can I grow here? What can I grow here? Can I grow this here? How do I grow this here? And what's wrong with my tree? Your entire career, those will be the questions you get, okay? The other thing is when you go on an international assignment, it takes time to figure out who the man is. The man is the guy that actually grows the crop, actually has some real information for you. He may not be the one up front doing all the talking. It takes a while to figure that out sometime. Who's the one that can actually be the cooperator that you need to make some progress. I often take checklists. I'm going to hurry here. If you're going to develop visuals, develop them for the illiterate. Then we don't have to worry about PowerPoints. If you do PowerPoints, get somebody to translate it for you, then take it to somebody else and say, what does this say? It's the only way to find out what's happened. If you're going to go someplace, ask for report writing days with an internet connection, okay? Also, just like regular extension, don't make snap judgments in the field. Say, I got to go back and think about this. I want to check with a colleague. Make up any excuse you want. But don't make snap judgments in the field. Things can look different. Ask for report writing days. And then here's the major one. Write that report before you leave the country if you can, because you get home and it won't get done, okay? And now remember, if you want to do international consulting, your information's now out there. Don't pretend it's proprietary. Don't be offended when you see your slides in somebody else's presentation. Take it as honoring your information. Business card contacts, you know, you go to these countries, everybody wants your business card, then they send you an email, and it's like, who is this? Is it male? Is it female? Who is this person? So I tell them that when I give them a business card, and I often say, hey, include your picture, okay? You're going to get lots of requests for people to come work in your lab, be placed in other labs, make contacts. The best piece of information I can give is interview the person, in the country if you can, or by Skype. You need to have an idea of their communication skills. Maybe you can even ask them a few horticulture questions, okay? But it's the only way to find out if you're going to have a piece of dead weight in your lab for 6 months or a year. Again, you're going to be asked to arrange return visits. Remember your clientele and how they will view this. Or maybe there's... And one way to get around this is start asking your clientele to accompany you to international meetings. I've done that with the pistachio industry. And, you know, guys that were formerly, they don't know what they're doing. First of all, they get there and again, tell them everything they know for the price of a cup of coffee. And again, just like me, they learn things, okay? Finally, you will be asked to edit manuscripts, production manuals, PowerPoints. This can take a lot of time. Look at things before you do, and remember that you're not copy editors. You're science editors. They can hire copy editors to do that. Okay? The rewards, for me, it was travel and opportunity, a chance to be something larger than myself. Research ideas, it figured majorly in my career. You know, new technology and applications. I saw a little kind of pistachio harvester, translation, a golf umbrella upside down in a pistachio tree that was worth the whole trip to Sicily for small. You make colleagues, you make friends, you make contacts, and it does result in professional advancement in both what you've learned and what you can publish. That's when I have people at my table. We'll talk about those. I'll finish up with this. I wanted to give you one picture. This is me in Afghanistan. I decided I was going to blend in. Thank you very much.